Well, thank you very much for coming this morning. I appreciate you showing up early. I think this will be worth our time. And this is our very first, we'll call it Bible study. And we want it to be low-key, ask questions as you like. This morning, I don't know that there'll be a lot of, you know, reason for questions as far as I'm coming to kind of lay some things out. And when we spoke about this last week, Nanette had said, and Maggie, about how about practical application? And so we gave that a lot of thought, and it really kind of played into the direction where I was thinking of going anyways, and you know, essentially life application, or taking the truth and taking the instruction and actually applying it in our lives and all these crazy circumstances and things and places that we are in our lives. So that's where we're going with this. The plan is for 4 weeks in a row. If it's that bad, maybe this will be the last, first and last. We don't know, but I think it'll be okay. And then we'll see where it goes from forth. One of the great things I want to share with the men and the women here is that since I'm new to actually doing something like this, is that having to actually have to do this is the greatest thing in the world, because it puts you in the Word in a whole different way than just browsing through it. So I would say that, you know, if you desire to do this, or you want to really help dig harder, is to volunteer or to do this. You know, do the fifth week, or, you know, with the women's studies, do your own study. We don't necessarily have to watch videos and you know, read copy that already has been written. I mean, it's right there between, for us, it's Romans through Philemon, and pick a topic and study it out, and it's a lot of fun. And it gets you in about a million different directions, and that it's exciting. So today I want to start with the topic for this series is we're going to talk about Romans chapter 12. And we're going to cover the whole chapter, but we're specifically going to address verses 9 through 21. And I'm going to start with this by just reading it, the whole chapter, and laying it out. It says, chapter 12, verse 1, in the book of Romans, "I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be you transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. For I say, though the grace given unto me to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but think soberly, according as God hath dealt every man the measure of faith. For as we have many members in one body, and all members have not the same office, so we, being many, are one body in Christ, and every one members one of another. Having then gifts differing according to the grace that is given to us, whether prophecy, let us prophesy according to the proportion of faith, or ministry, let us wait on our ministering, or he that teacheth on teaching, or he that exhorteth on exhortation, he that giveth, let him do it with simplicity, he that rules with diligence, and he that shows mercy with cheerfulness." Here's where we start with our instruction here. "Let love be without dissimulation. Abhor that which is evil. Cleave to that which is good. Be kindly affectioned one to another, in brotherly love, in honor, preferring one another. Not slothful in business, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing instant in prayer, distributing to the necessity of saints, given to hospitality. Bless them which persecute you, bless and curse not. Rejoice with them that do rejoice, and weep with them that weep. Be of the same mind one toward another. Mind not high things, but condescend to men of low estate. Be not wise in your own conceits. Recompense to no man evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. If it be possible, as much as lies in you, live peaceably with all men. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, 'Vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord.' Therefore, if thine enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, give him drink. For in so doing, thou shalt heap coals of fire on his head. Be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good. It's everyday life, isn't it? Not. You know, it's the total opposite of what the world says to do. We're supposed to be, defensive and shrewd and, getting one up on the next guy. You can pretend like you can have dissimulation. That's basically hypocrisy. You can act like you like somebody as long as you're going to get something from them. I think it's an amazing act of direction to us for our conduct of how we're supposed to walk. And it's interesting, but I get a lot, when you read this, it's like, yeah, but. Instead of, but now, it's, yeah, but. Yeah, but, we live in a whole different time than when Paul wrote that. Things are different today. We have the internet. We have a lot of things going on in the world. Our government is a mess, and our the president is doing this, and our financial system is good, and jobs are and people at work are they're annoying, and they do all these different things. Yeah, that's good, but I thought about that because it doesn't make any sense why God would put this in words and we weren't supposed to walk in that on a daily basis. It just makes no sense. So I started doing a little homework on history, and I wanted to know, who was the president at the time when Paul was there, and what was the Congress doing and all that. And at those times, there really wasn't a president; it was an emperor, and his name was Nero. There was a transition from the period of 1 AD when Christ was born all the way through, but essentially Paul was there when Nero was ruling. And he was a lot better than our presidents are here in the United States. He was, had a lot more character, and they had a much better system than we do. I'm being facetious about that. So I liked it. What I want to do is I took a little thing off of the history. This is all documented and backed up with, but I'm going to give you a little overview of Nero and who he was. Anybody know about Nero? Study him out or look at his character. Nero was the emperor. He was his mother Agrippina. I'll get to that in a minute, but essentially his mother poisoned his father so that he could, with poison mushrooms, that's the theory at least, that his father died of poisoning, and they suspected it was the mother, so that Nero at 17 would become the emperor. So as far as introduction and sources, and this will be brief, but I do want to cover this because I think it's important to do a comparison. But this was a little caption about Nero here. But above all, he was carried away by the craze for popularity, and he was jealous of all who in any way stirred the feeling of the mob. And he was also known as, what an artist the world is losing, when he died. That's what they put on one of his epitaph. And who was above all remembered for crimes against his mother and the Christians. He was indeed a sad falling off of the levels of Augustus and Tiberius. So that's how he is remembered as far as for Nero. The prime sources of Nero's life and reign are from Tacitus, Annales, and he talks about the books, and Suetonius. And so I can, I've got documents as far as I'm not making this stuff up. Claudius, his dad, died, and he had eaten some poison mushrooms, the responsibility for which was believed was been Agrippina, which is Nero's mother. And the young Nero, at yet 17 years old, was hailed on October 13 as emperor by the Praetorian Guard. his mother continually tried to influence him through this whole thing and never let him forget that how he became emperor, is that she put him in his place. So, I mean, this is going on in their government at this time. Nero's betrothal, which is Octavia, anybody ever heard about Octavia? She was a significant step in his ultimate accession to the throne, but she was quiet, too shy, too modest for his taste. He was very attracted to Poppaea Sabina, the wife of Otho, and that woman continually goaded him to break from Octavia and to show himself an adult by opposing his mother. In his private life, Nero honored the musical arts, tastes which were chief interests, but at this stage they were kept private and by the instigation of his advisors. They didn't want it to get out that he liked music and wanted to act. But Agrippina had tried desperately to retain her influence on her son, so she was trying to continue influencing her son, and there's things that she did to do that I can't mention in a preaching lesson, a Bible study. But, I mean, this depravity at its best from his own mother. And so as he started becoming more independent, Agrippina knew this was all going to end. So she sent Nero a message that she was, well, oh, I know, here's what happened. I'm kind of getting ahead. So Nero got tired of his mom, and he decided he was going to kill her. So he put her in a boat that was going to fall apart, and he boarded her on a boat that was supposedly to fall apart. And as it happened, when they said they break down, they prove it, Nero undertook the various devices to eliminate his mother without appearance of guilt on his part. So he wanted to do it without getting caught. The choice was a splendid vessel which could collapse while she was aboard. As this happened, she swam ashore, and her attendant, having cried out that she was Agrippina, was clubbed to death. So Agrippina knew what was going on, so they killed her attendant. So she knew that she was next. So then she got away, but she sent Nero a message that she was well. His response was to send a detachment of sailors to finish the job. So this is the emperor, you know, the president of Rome, while Paul's writing these Gospels. When she struck her head, anyways, there's a lot of other gory stuff there, but essentially he killed his mom. And so after that, the administrative and foreign policy, so he's a bad guy with his mom. What about the money and the foreign policy? They had spent, his administration, what he liked to do was, further, he spent many nights roaming the city in disguise with numerous companions who terrorized the street and attacked individuals. Those who dared to defend themselves often faced death afterwards because they had shown disrespect for the emperor. The die was being cast for the last phase of Nero's reign. So then there was a lot of discussions here as far as about the wars with England or Britannia at the time. So they were at war. There were wars and rumors of wars going on at that time, just like there are right now. And he wasn't handling them very well. And the year 64 was the most significant for Nero at this point. So he hooked up with a guy, another advisor, that was pretty bad. And his name was Tigellinus, T-I-G-E-L-L-I-N-S, Tigellinus, that would be the way I would say it. So he kept getting Nero even worse. He was giving him bad advice. Those two were two peas in the pod, essentially, is the way they would call it. But there was a fire began in Rome. Everybody heard Rome burning? So there was a fire began in the southeast angle of the Circus Maximus, spreading through the shops which clustered there and raged for the better part of the week. There was a brief success in controlling the blaze, but then it first burst forth there, so that many people claim that the fires were set as a deliberate act. And they set, after the fortnight, the fire burned itself out, having consumed 10 of the 14 Augustan regions into which the city had been divided. Nero was an Antium through this much of this disaster, but his efforts at the relief were substantial. So he did pretend like he made an effort. Yet many believe that he was responsible for setting the fires, so that he could perform his own work, comparing the current fate of Rome to the downfall of Troy. All his efforts to assist the stricken city could not move the suspicion that the emperor had fiddled while Rome burned. As his, and it was interesting, I'll tell you in a minute, but, you know, he ended up wanting all the good land that was right in the middle of the city that had burnt up. But as his popularity waned because of this suspicion, Nero and Telenus realized that individuals were needed that could be charged with this disaster. So it so happened that there was such a group at hand, Christians, who had made themselves unpopular because of their refusal to worship the emperor, their way of life, and their secret meetings, like we're having right now. So further, at this time, two of the most significant teachers were in Rome, Peter and Paul. They were ideal scapegoats. I don't know how accurate that part was, but... Right, but so that's why I pointed it out, because of right division. I got that one, so we don't have to, but you know Paul was there. So, but Peter and Paul, but they had that in there. They were ideal scapegoats, individuals whom Romans loathed, and who had continually sung of the forthcoming end of the world. This is just how this writer puts it. Their destruction was planned with the utmost precision and cruelty for the entertainment of the populace. The venue was Nero's circus near the Monus Vaticanus. Christians were exposed to wild animals and set ablaze, smeared with pitch to illuminate the night. The executions were so grisly that even the populace displayed sympathy for the victims. Separately, Peter, now this was all, you know, it says separately Peter was crucified upside down and Paul was beheaded. But Nero's attempt and hope to shift all suspicion of arson to others had failed. His popularity, even among lower classes, was irrevocably impaired. And then it just gives us a breakdown here of his life. But essentially, the government, the people, everybody there at Rome were a pretty corrupt society. And then, you know, you look at this, I guess we're kind of setting up this, but things are different today, okay? But it's not the same. You know, we have internet and TV and it gets around faster. If you go to chapter 13, of Romans chapter 13, and I want to just set this up also with Mr. Stams. When you study Grace School of the Bible, one of the things when you go to Romans, Richard advised you to do the commentary on the Epistle of the Romans by Cornelius Stams, and so I think it's excellent. I mean, the guy lays it out. You know, obviously we're going to like and dislike certain things, but he does. I read his commentary on this next part of the Bible about Christians and his government and his neighbor and his Lord, subjection to the powers. And I just find it, I thought it was, it's interesting that Paul does Romans chapter 12, verses 9, let love be without dissimulation, forgiveness, and all, you know, that whole, those 13 verses, 28 points. And then the very next chapter, he goes into the government, which is, you know, seems to be a distraction for Christians nowadays as to, you know, the government getting us off track. But he says, let every soul be subject to the higher power because of the powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that are ordained of God, whosoever therefore resists the power, resists the ordinance of God. And they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. For the rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. For he is a minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid. For he bears a sword not in vain, for he is a minister of God, a revenger to execute upon him that doeth evil. And then so there's more to that. But Mr. Stamm's comments is, our studies in Romans, I'm quoting him on his book now, our study in Romans said we now have taken us to the subject of Christians and government. It is amazing that so many Christians are not aware of the truth. They do not know the power that the powers that are ordained of God, so that ultimately there is no power but of God. It is true that we are living under the dispensation of grace of God, but we are also living under the dispensation of human government. The dispensation instituted in Noah's day, Genesis 9:5-6, has never been brought to a close. God ordained human government, holding man responsible for the life of his brother. The decree, whoso sheddeth God, or man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed, Genesis 9:6, makes man responsible even to execute capital punishment, and this, of course, includes lesser penalties. So, the human government, like we're living in now. More than this, a particular powers that be are God-ordained. Generally, God gives nations exactly the kind of rulers they deserve. So I thought that was a very good point. Some of these are wicked and immoral, the basis of men, yet they are ordained of God, Daniel 4:7, and responsible to him. The pagan and arrogant Nebuchadnezzar, Daniel said, the God of heaven hath given thee kingdom, power, strength, and glory. Daniel 2:37. And to this king, in his pride, a voice later came from heaven condemning him to insanity until he should learn the lesson that the Most High God ruleth in the kingdom of men and giveth it to whomsoever he will. Daniel 4:32. Our Lord said to Pilate, who was not saved, as we knew, thou couldst not have power at all against me except that it were given thee from above. John 19:11. Indeed, six times in these one brief passage of Romans, chapter 13:1-7, the apostles declare that the governments over us are ordained by God. These earthly rulers may be arbitrary or oppressive or corrupt, but God says, be subject, just as he directs the wife to be subject to the husband, the children to his parents, the servant to his master. Abuse of authority in any of these cases does not change the established order of God. For without such order, all would be chaos. This is not popular philosophy of the day, but it is path to harmony and to man's greatest happiness. The affirmation that we are responsible to obey only reasonable laws leaves the question of subjection upon each man's interpretation. The philosophy has driven many a nation to anarchy. I'll end it there. So, it's an interesting point, and it's that he makes. And so what we want to do is just laying the groundwork of Romans 12:9-21. And because in our lives, we're challenged by many, 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 many interruptions and distractions. And we go back and we go to 12:9. Anybody have any questions? There you go, Walt. Thank you.
It's hard for me to believe that there was an African country that had a black leader who was a very vicious. I said his name and I can't remember. He would have a husband and wife make love in front of him, that he'd kill the wife or kill the husband. Something like that.
Idi Amin.
Yes, okay. We are not to oppose him. I mean, maybe not you and I, but his countrymen aren't to try to oppose him and create a better living standard and get rid of a cruel master like that. God ordains that.
Well, no. You as an individual, you're under the powers of your leaders, and your leaders are to exercise that. You can't go out on your own as a person and try to exercise that kind of.
No, but I mean,
we didn't ordain it. You're not ordaining anything. You're just under that leadership.
Yeah, and I'm not to try to change that.
But what Jack's going to share is the fact that no matter what leader or human government you're under, you still got a ministry.
Right.
That isn't quite answering my question. You're saying ministry. That's comforting people and, you know, maybe not telling them, you know, we're not supposed to go against the leaders because it's God ordained.
What, Paul, or I'd like to give you a homework for this week. I'd like you to read Romans through Philemon. I want you to find one verse. I want you to find one verse that has that backs up what you just what you like to would like to believe.
It sounds like that God.
Give me one verse. I mean, it's a, just give me one. I can't find one in our dispensation. I can't find one. I can find them in the Old Testament. I can grab that and, you know, live out of context. I can't find one.
One verse that tells us to stand against the evils in government.
There's what?
There's not one verse in Romans through Philemon.
Abhor, yeah. It's just essentially we are to abhor that which is evil. We're to recognize evil. Okay, in Genesis chapter... Yes, sir?
I was just going to say, what about 12:18?
If it be possible, as much as lies within you, live peaceably with all men. As much as lies in you. Okay? So, Christ is in you. He lived peaceably. Now, you can't... We can't... Now this is good, because these are the great questions, because this is where we're setting this up for the next 4 weeks. These are the good stuff. This is the juice here. I read the same one and get the same feeling. Lets me off the hook. If it be possible, in my flesh, lets me off the hook. But it says, as much as lies in you, live peaceably with all men. Well, who lies in you?
Admittedly, I see
who.
I've always read that. My mindset has always been, Christ knew what was coming ahead.
Mm-hmm.
He knew that the Jews were going to need protection or they would be totally eliminated.
Right.
So therefore, he put forth the edict.
Right.
Which actually, in my mind,
right. I don't.
That,
yeah.
That's been my
right.
That I always looked at that verse and thought that was so important that he changed that. Turn your other cheek because they're going to be the priests. So when you go up and smack them around, they're going to make you turn the other cheek.
Right.
However, the people that I have met in my life that I've known who would never want to do that, which is walk away with no cheeks.
Mm-hmm. So, right.
So what? So there has to be a defender.
Yes, ma'am?
You know, I've read that verse, I don't know how many times, and that part B, it's the first time it struck me that what was life in you, Christ's life in you. But you know what's significant is he knew what was coming when he was here, and he still lived peaceably. He knew what was coming. He knew he was going to be scorched, beaten, lied about, trampled on, and the government had their hand in totally annihilating Jesus Christ. And I know he knew the outcome, but he also knew the way they were going to do it. And he didn't say, you know, they're evil, and I'm going to teach them a lesson before I leave this earth.
That's right.
And they deserve to be taught a lesson, but he decided not to do that. And God allowed it.
Yes, sir?
On that verse 18, though, it says, if it be possible. We know that a lot of things are not possible. But that does seem like it gives us a way out. But it says, live peacefully, and the key is that Christ in you doing it. But if I can't live with anybody that I dislike, governments or whatever you want to, then if possible, I just avoid them. You know, I just totally avoid them and just continue with the thing. And when you mention abhor to evil, the definition is to hate extremely.
Yes.
You know, but that love in verse 9, you know, that's not the love that we think we love each other.
Mm-mm. You go, I mean, that's agape love.
Well, no,
Is it agape love?
No, if you do your search on let love be without dissimulation, that love is in that Bible that showed you what they did. They killed people. They hated people. They hated the Lord. They did this. That's love without dissimulation. But you've got to abhor that. And it's weird, but you...
Hypocrisy?
Well, that's dissimulation, but that love, if you do the search on it, that particular love, that's not the love that we think we need to love each other. You see what they loved in the Bible. I'll give you some verses.
Yeah, because searched that one, it was there's agape, there's Philadelphia, and because the next section is going into brotherly love, but the second one. But yes, Roger,
on Walt's first question he asked, I don't think we answered that quite right for you, did we? What you were saying is we're supposed to challenge that emperor as an individual. You can't do that even today. You know what's going on in your government today is bad. They're being accused of murder for four people over in Bogwe, whatever the name of that place is. But the thing of it is, that has to be handled in the ruling body of the government. We will go up there and start a crowd of people and go towards Nero and something like that, and he just hangs us on a post. It's not our duty to do that. We see the evil as a citizen, but we can't challenge the ruling body. You know what I mean? That way. I think that's what you were saying. We're not for it, but we can't go up and challenge that authority.
Well, I disagree with that. In our country, that's a different story, but Idi Amin, or whatever his name was, that guy was just horrible. I mean,
let me draw this back. I'm going to bring this back. Okay, and this is where I'm staying on the foundation on this whole thing. Who is your ensemble? Who are you to replicate? Answer the question. Who? Me? Or somebody that you hang out with at, your buddies? Paul. Paul is walking our distance, as I understand it, what you posted on Facebook the other day. He's an ensemble of Christ. Our message to us right now, we're to walk as Paul walked. We're to follow him, because that's Jesus Christ right now walking. Paul walked as Jesus Christ. And it's interesting in that in Romans chapter 5, verse 1, through faith in Jesus Christ, you have peace with God. So God is sitting there. He is watching all of this stuff go on. He is watching all these disgusting things that you say, or you got to jump in and go do something about. And he's letting them happen. And he wants you to go do it? Think about it. He wants you to do it, Walt?
If somebody's going to kill my wife or my children, and I have a weapon, I'm just going to say, well, it's God's will.
Well, Walt, that's different.
That's not.
Why is it different? Because that's not the government. That's.
But you know what? Let me tell you something. You know what? You're right. That's a great point. Pardon the interruption. If someone's coming into your house, you have a right to defend yourself in our country. In our country, you have a right to defend yourself. Now, let me tell you something. When the government comes after you and your wife, you're doomed. They're going to have so many people, you can put away 10,000 rounds, and they're going to have 100,000, and they're going to wipe you out. You're going to, you're done. But if somebody goes to break in your house, should defend yourself.
Just what you said. If the government's coming in again, and I'm not supposed to live like Christ, say, goodbye.
What do those Christians do when they covered them with pitch and lit them so that they could light their parties up at night? There's nothing you could do. Listen, Walt, you can fight and give a high kick and cross chop and shoot at them. You're going down. Okay? But the point is, how we go down has an impact. Because how we do go down, how the Christians suffered in faith and honor without whining like a bunch, or being all defensive, I believe, I'm making this up, this is not documented history stuff, but what did it say in my little overview as far as how did the people respond to Nero's executions?
Well,
They were disgusted. It got to them. Because it says, be not overcome with evil, but overcome evil with good. Now, what's overcome? It's a battle. It's a wrestling match, okay? You and I are wrestling or whatever, and I get to, you're either overcome me in the wrestling, and you're on top, I'm on the bottom, or if MMA, you're on the bottom and you're a good fighter, but one is overcoming the other. So you can either overcome good with evil. Evil can overcome good. Evil can take over, but we are instructed to overcome evil with good. And then we're going to study good.
Now, when the Germans invaded France during World War II, what they did was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know that. Are you telling me the French people, as Christians, shouldn't have done anything?
As a nation, the men that signed up to defend and fight in a war, Joshua Luke and whatever, they get set, they're going to shoot guns? Absolutely.
At my age, I couldn't join an army, but I could be...
Sure you can.
I could be in the underground doing stuff to...
We should be getting the gospel out before these people get killed by the nation and go to hell when they die.
Well, no.
That's our job.
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
But in reality, it worked out that the Germans came in. There were a lot of men and women, too, that were not in the Army, Navy, and that. They were in the underground, and they mm-hmm. would blow things up, and they would kill Germans, and so on and so forth.
I think Paul said you'd have been wasting your time. Paul the Apostle would have said you should be doing churches. You should be getting the gospel out. You should be preaching the Word of God rightly divided. Quit wasting your time with that. Get them sneaking in your house and get them in the basement.
Do you think the Germans, once they conquered or any Russia or somewhere, would want you to do churches? They would tell you, they'd make up a law that says you can't do that anymore? And you're telling, no, wait a minute.
They hate you. They're going to hate you, Walt. Yeah.
No. My point is, you said that we should follow what Christ did.
Mm-hmm.
So we're to obey our authorities. If they're the authority over us and they tell us, no more churches, you don't meet together, you don't build churches, are we to agree with that?
Sir?
Have you not read?
Yeah. Right.
Go ahead.
I got one question, or to answer your question. When Jack mentioned about N samples and there's X samples, the N sample is what we need. That's Christ. The X sample is what we see. When Paul was in prison, he's there as a pattern. Because he was in prison for this message, right?
Yeah.
Bound in the inner prison, not just the prison, he was in the inner. And when the lightning hit and the doors opened up, did he scatter and did he run? And no, he stayed right there because that's where he was at because he was under bond. Okay? What we're going to share, what Jack's going to do over the next couple, several weeks, Germany, whatever you want to use, whatever countries out there today, they have leadership. And the people within that leadership is under that authority. And whether you agree with it or not, that's what you chose to do.
Right.
Now, if Christ died in China, is it legal to have churches in China, Christian
no.
churches? Are they churches in China?
Yes.
Does that make them...
They're breaking
evil?
The law.
Does that make them evil? We've got 10,000 DVDs of this school in underground China. This message does not, if you don't know what I'm saying, this message does not interfere with governments.
Right.
Well, it does.
No, it does not.
No, it doesn't.
No, it does not.
And you're going against what the government says.
But that verse teaches you not to interfere with government. Just preach the word. Yeah. Right. Just preach the word.
Didn't he say there... When one of the men said to him, he says,
about
our taxes? We got to pay our taxes. He said, well, go there, and he said, and cast a line out, a fish.
All right.
In it, you find a coin.
Yeah. All right.
The coin said, go pay.
Okay, I've gone over. I'm cutting into the... Yes, ma'am. Yeah.
I think this is a rabbit hole that you're going down. It's distracting you from the truth. It's taking you away from the message of Christ. And so, therefore, it's a detour, and you need to get back on the path.
Right.
All right. Listen, this is a Bible study.
We're,
hey, you guys. See, I knew this was going to be good. I knew this. We're going to get through this for 4 weeks. This is going to be fun. All right. Father. Oh. Yikes. All right. Let me wrap this up. This is good.
You guys ready?
Yeah. Father, thank you for the opportunity. Thank you for the honor to have this pulpit and the truth of your word. I pray that the truth of your word only work in this meeting and work amongst my brethren and myself. In the name of Jesus Christ, I pray. Thank you. Amen.
Amen. Take that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you got half your message.
How do I get a copy of that?
Huh?
My goodness, allowing us to ask questions.
It's all right. That was the whole purpose. We got to work this out.
That's true. That's the way I said.
We got to work this out.
It's just people. You know, you're going to look at things differently.
I'll bring the duct tape next week. If the church would challenge Rome.
I told Val, I said,
God told him, says, what belongs to God belongs to God. In fact, did you know that Rome,
just so happens, I remember,
believed, gave every nation that Rome conquered, they believed in their gods. They wanted to know all about their gods. They guaranteed Israel.
One final request for me on this study that I didn't get covered. Your homework is, I want you to read Romans chapter 12, verses 9 through 21 for breakfast, for lunch,